Moncrief on News Talk.
Happy Bastille Day. Today, they celebrate the storming of the Bastille, a key event in establishing the French Republic. But it's also a time when the French recall other key periods in French history, such as the resistance movement during World War II. And in that, Samuel Beckett, among other Irish people, played a key part. Oliver Hanlon is a researcher on Franco-Irish relations at UCC. Oliver, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Strangely enough, when the Nazis invaded France, Beckett was here. He was in Ireland.
Yes, it's a strange kind of a story. He was in Ireland on holidays at the time when war was declared, when the Germans invaded. And he decided, strangely, to actually go back to France.
Yeah.
And not to stay in Ireland.
Which I would imagine it was an onerous enough journey that would have been.
It would have been, I'd imagine, yeah. At the time, a lot more difficult than today, shall
yes.
we say.
Yeah, and did he specifically go back to join the resistance?
Well, I don't think so at the time. He went back and he just went to Paris.
Mm.
And what happened was that a lot of people were actually fleeing from Paris because they were afraid of the invading army, the Germans, coming in. So they just left, about 8 million people left the Paris region in the north of France all there and just went down south to a safer, what they thought would be a safer place.
Mm.
And he was amongst those 8 million.
Right. Okay. So he went to Paris initially, but then he fled Paris.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. So where he ended up, was that still Nazi controlled?
No.
Or did he go into Vichy France?
Well, no, it hadn't happened at the time. This was still before that.
Yeah.
So he was safe, shall we say, down in the south of France. Things kind of relaxed a bit.
Mm.
And then he decided himself and his partner to go back to Paris.
Right. Okay. And that was into the belly of the
exactly.
beast, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And at that time, was he a well-known writer?
I wouldn't think he was. This was before a lot of the work that we know about today, like Waiting for Godot and so on. He was like, he would have been appearing, say, in newspapers and things like that.
Mm.
But definitely not the kind of fame that he got in later life.
Well, no, indeed. Yeah. I just wonder, even if he had a small bit of fame, that, you know, would he have been on the Nazi radar, so to speak? And would they have seen that as some sort of victory to have this Irish writer wants to live under the Nazi regime?
Yeah,
kind of thing?
I wouldn't think he had that stature at the time,
okay.
to be honest.
So how did he join the resistance, or is that known?
It is, yeah. He joined a cell in Paris. These were friends of his, the artist Picabia. He was an artist in France at the time. And the family of his were organising this cell. So Beckett and his partner joined the cell, like a lot of others. And that's how he did it. He just joined the cell with a lot of other, like, you know, I mentioned the artist. He probably had other kind of creative people as well who joined this cell.
Yeah, and I assume different cells did different things. And if this was kind of like the arty cell, they weren't going to carry out assassinations or anything.
Yes, you could say that. There were different strands of the resistance. You had some people who were involved with the kind of work that Beckett was doing, which was translation.
Mm.
He would have been, you know, translating material that was coming into him, talking about the movements of German troops, for example. He would have translated that so that it would be sent back to London.
Right, okay.
Because the group that he was involved with, and a lot of groups in France in the resistance, they were really, not organised, but they were connected to London, to a group called the Special Operations Executive, which was set up by Churchill. And the idea of that was to help the resistance movements in, you know, enemy-held territories. So in a lot of the European countries that were in the hands of the Germans, that to give the resistance some kind of assistance. And so the resistance in France, what they would have been doing was things like what Beckett was doing. So kind of behind-the-scenes work involved in intelligence gathering, translating documents and so on. But you also had people involved in the resistance who were involved in guerrilla activity. So they were like sabotaging German trains or, you know, things like that, or munitions or factories. And you had people carrying out attacks as well.
Yeah, but one imagines that the intelligence gathering, especially getting it back to London, was fairly important in terms of the entire war, really, and yes, where the British might attack.
Yes, definitely. Like, once you know what's happening on the ground, you can kind of plan accordingly.
Yeah. And was this risky work for him? Well, I suppose it was risky work for anyone who was involved in the resistance.
It was, definitely. Like, it was illegal, obviously, when you were doing it in occupation, when France was occupied by Germany. And just to give you an example of the cell that Beckett was in, once it was found out by the authorities, the German authorities, that this cell was operating, and they just crushed it. People that were in the cell were, you know, rounded up and sent off to concentration camps.
Not Beckett?
Not Beckett, no. He had heard about it, or somehow he found out about the fact that they had been found out, and he managed to escape from Paris and got his way down to the south of France, and he was secure there for the rest of the war.
Okay, all right. And and when he went down south, did he continue any resistance work, or was he retired then at that stage?
Well, I suppose he had done a lot already, and he was in a different environment as well. He wouldn't have had the same connections as he had in Paris. Mm. So he was involved in some things, but definitely not the same kind of work that he was involved with in Paris.
Yeah. And afterwards, would it be fair to say he was reticent to talk about any of this?
Yes, he was. He didn't really talk about it, you know, publicly or openly. But there are certain cases where, say, a biographer, somebody who was researching a book about him, would talk to him about his life, and this would come up, and he would talk about it openly.
Mm. Yeah.
But not in a boastful way.
Mm.
He kind of said it was Boy Scout stuff.
Yeah.
You know, downplaying it.
Yes.
But really, you know, it was dangerous because, as I mentioned, the people who were caught, things didn't end well for them.
Yeah, indeed. Did the French state recognise what he did?
They did, yes. Like a lot of people, you know, French and otherwise, who were involved in the resistance, he was awarded a medal, the Croix de Guerre, so a war medal, but also another medal as well, in recognition of what he did.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It really kind of makes, you know, buffs the sheen of his glamorousness, really, in a way. Tell us, though, about Mary Elmes, and what did she do? Because she, like, saved countless lives.
Yes, yes. Very interesting story, actually. She was a Cork-born lady who was over in Spain during the Spanish Civil War. She was involved with the Quakers, you know, the
Society of Friends.
Society of Friends.
Yeah.
So she was involved with the Quakers. She was down in the region of Murcia and Alicante. And what she was doing was just providing relief for the people, because a lot of their lives were devastated. So she was making sure they had enough to eat. And she was involved with a children's hospital down in Murcia. But when things got really difficult in Spain and Franco was cracking down on, say, the Society of Friends and groups like that providing relief, she actually went into France. So she was down in Perpignan, down near the Spanish border, and she started work down there again with the Society of Friends, and she was just providing assistance for people. So working in education for the children who were refugees from the Spanish Civil War. And she was also providing food as well to people in need down there.
Yeah. But smuggling people over the border a bit as well?
Yeah, there was a case of that. Because, you know, she was involved with so many groups of people down there. She came across a lot of Jewish people who were refugees. And under the regime in France at the time, the occupation, these people would have ultimately been sent to concentration camps, these Jewish children predominantly that she was involved with. So she managed to rescue some of them. The numbers aren't, you know, completely known, but it's thought over 400. She saved over 400 children down in that area of France, and she managed to smuggle them in her car.
Huh.
So that's how the story goes. I don't know if, you know, the logistics of it, but that's what the story, how it goes.
Anyway. Yeah, that is remarkable. A few people are texting and giving out to me, because in France they don't call it Bastille Day at all.
No, they don't.
Well, how come we do?
That's a good question. I suppose we focus in on the particular, the spark that lit the revolution, you know, the fall of the prison, the Bastille, and that's what we call it. I suppose it's probably in the rest of the world it's known as Bastille Day, but In France, it's known as Le 14 Juillet or La Fête Nationale. So,
okay, yeah. So it's known as the 14th of July, yeah. Really. Yeah. Maybe that's more of a prosaic kind of sounding name rather than a Bastille Day. Anyway, either way, it doesn't really matter. Oliver, thank you so much for coming into us today. That was Oliver Hanlon there, a researcher on Franco-Irish relations at UCC, at the Department of French in UCC.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.